quick 15-second promo for Purple Stride in April. Go!
PurpleStride.org.
/Team Trek.
We're a team! We're a team!
There's our leader, Kitty! Our vision of hope!
Hey, if you're a fan of the Inglourious Treksperts, you don't want to miss Deck 78, our subscriber-only podcast, which deals with pop culture and Trek-adjacent subjects. It's a pretty spectacular podcast with amazing guests and conversation every other week. And the only way to get it is to subscribe today. So go to TreksportsPlus.com. That's TreksportsPlus.com to subscribe to Deck 78. Fire the rockets.
Hey. This is Terry Farrell of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and I'm here to invite you to join me and the Inglourious Treksperts as we go on the ultimate road trek, visiting the most iconic Star Trek locations ever filmed. We'll share fun facts about scenes that were filmed there, their incredible Hollywood histories. We may even fight a Gorn or two along the way. We have many special guests from Star Trek movies and series. You can reserve your copy of this epic new documentary on Blu-ray or DVD, along with a gaggle of intergalactic rewards, such as Ernie, the pet Vasquez rock, limited edition collector pins, cool sci-fi swag, autographs, of course, and so much more, by going to makethetrek.com and supporting us as we boldly go to the greatest Star Trek locations ever filmed. Go to makethetrek.com and let's see what's out there. Engage.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Although edited for television, tonight's thriller contains scenes of suspense and violence which may be unsuitable for young viewers. Parental discretion is advised.
This episode of Inglourious Treksperts may contain material that is unsuitable for younger or more sensitive listeners.
Viewer discretion is advised.
And how?
Hey, this is Mark A. Altman.
And this is Darren Doctorman.
And I may have to deny it later, but this is probably Ashley Miller.
And we are the newly macho, Inglourious
Treksperts. It's time to cowboy up.
Wow. Oh, hell yeah, yeah, it is.
We said this before, we have a treat for you. This goes beyond a treat. So we have the star of Where No Man Has Gone Before,
the
2001.
Yes.
Oh, he's star. He's pretty dynamic in Where No Man Has Gone Before, as Gary Mitchell.
He's the OG Star Trek villain.
Yeah.
And the lieutenant, 2001, A Space Odyssey. And much to my chagrin, we didn't talk about this, Jack DeMise, Model Shop.
Yeah.
So we'll have to save that for a future discussion. But this, I'm at a loss for words. Yeah. This is the craziest conversation we've ever had with a guest on this show.
Yeah.
I'm Gary Lockwood, and that's the way it was.
These historic minutes are sponsored each night by Shell.
I have to tell you guys, you know, the day, well, it was the St. Patrick's Day that we actually did the panel, but my birthday was during this particular
weekend, yeah,
convention. And the universe gave me the greatest birthday present I have ever received on that Saturday morning when Darren and I went into the green room and he was there and we started talking. And the man just started telling stories, only one of which is repeated.
Made it to the interview, yeah.
So many stories. that just blew my mind. They are some of the best Hollywood stories that I've ever heard. Gary Lockwood himself is one of the greatest characters that I have ever met. I feel blessed to have been there at that time. I mean, I thought I was having a pretty good weekend saying hello to Bill Shatner, okay? But
Which it was.
It was amazing. And then, great of me, James. I mean, okay. I want to adopt you as my new dad. He's just that amazing.
See, you know what the line for this episode should have been? You should have killed me while you had the chance.
Oh my goodness.
Ook. I mean, it was kind of like you could see his eyes start to glow and then you go crazy.
It's really odd because, you know, obviously we all have been a fan of his for various reasons for most of our lives. Much like Bill Shatner, he's kind of the anti-Shatner, you know? Yeah. He's kind of this personality that is bigger than any of the roles he's played. And he totally represents the sort of new old Hollywood that happened in the 60s, mm-hmm. right? It's the new group of stars that got to know the previous group of Hollywood people and yet went off on their own for some strange reason. And I was lucky enough a few years ago, probably 4 or 5 years ago, to meet Gary at the shop of a friend of mine. And we spent the day with him yakking about stuff. And it was nowhere near as wild as our time was this past weekend. But he's such a refreshing, honest, no BS. He is all real, and he doesn't give a flying F about anything or anyone. And it's really great.
He is OG cowboy.
Yes. I mean, the term alpha male has become a pejorative with some people lately. I don't subscribe to that interpretation, but he is truly an alpha male. You know, he's Aldo Ray without the drink. He's Lee Marvin without the signature role. You know, and I shouldn't say that because, of course, the signature role is 2001, but because it is such a cerebral and it's stripped of any personality. It's such an austere performance designed to be that way intentionally by Kubrick and Gary. He doesn't have that sign of signature role like that a Brando would have in On the Waterfront or something. And I love what he has to say. It's like, I wasn't a method actor. They turn the camera on and I just act.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a cowboy. And, but he is something else. And I've always admired his performance as Gary Mitchell in Where No Man Has Gone Before.
My friend James Kirk. Remember those rodent things on Dimerus? The poison darts they threw? I took one meant for you.
And almost died. I remember.
So why be afraid of me now?
You've been testing your ability to take over the Enterprise. In the transporter room, you said something about us seeming like insects by comparison. Squashing us if we got in your way.
I was drugged then.
Yes. In the sick bay, you said if you were in my place, you'd kill a mutant like yourself.
Why don't you kill me then? Mr. Spock is right, and you're a fool if you can't see it.
You don't mean that, Gary.
Men cannot survive if a race of true espers is born. In time, you'll understand that.
Jim.
His eyes went back to normal.
Fighting the force field drained his strength. For a while, at least, he could be handled now.
Yeah.
I'll just keep getting stronger. You know that, don't you?
You know, I think what I was getting at in the interview, and you'll hear, is I wasn't asking about how he got along with Shatner. It was how, you know, Shatner could dominate anyone because he was number one on the call sheet,
right,
and had so much charisma that he would blow anyone off the screen. You know, even Ricardo Montalbán, he's able to go toe-to-toe with, right? Gary Mitchell, Gary Lockwood, is maybe the one person on that show who may have more charisma even, you know, where you really felt like, you know, Shatner or Kirk
was in danger.
Was in danger. He was in such danger. He needed a giant gun. His usual gun was not enough. He needed a giant gun.
His gun wasn't
to stop
big
him.
Enough.
Because
usually size doesn't matter. But size did matter. No, look, Gary has got, I mean, talk about charisma. You just begin to speak to the man and you feel it, right? Like, and it's interesting because Shatner has got a game face, right? Mm-hmm. Like he walks into the dinner with everybody and he is on and he's lovely and he's charismatic.
Hi, everybody.
You know, and
great
and
you just, to see you,
would,
you all.
You adore him. Yeah. But it left to his own devices, you know, and literally sometimes he seems to kind of contract into it because
withdraws.
Of the things. He withdraws into the things that we've talked about. But Gary does not seem to withdraw. Gary expands.
He's exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
He seems withdrawn when you first walk up to him, and then he opens up and he becomes the guru.
Yes, 1,000%. But he is so, he looks you in the eye.
Yeah.
You know, he speaks to you. You know, he addresses you as an equal. But you just kind of know that he is a giant.
Right.
And you're like, I'm just damn glad to be here.
And yet what was so interesting was we were about to go on stage and he hadn't arrived yet. And we turned to his handler and we basically said, you know, where's Gary? And he said, he doesn't want to come up. He said, is anyone even there? And we're like, there are over 100 people here, right? And we said, and then on the podcast, there are going to be, you know, tens of thousands more people who listen to this. And so then he's like, oh, okay, I'll come. You know, and you know, it was like so funny. It was like we were auditioning for him. And so he came up. And what was so gratifying was he had the best time. He was so glad he did it, you know, because the crowd, as you'll hear when you listen to it, I was surprised we didn't have walkouts because people are amazingly sensitive these days.
Yes.
You know, they seem to love it and found him absolutely fascinating because he really is of his time.
Yeah.
He's of his time,
but he's also a really positive role model.
Yes.
I mean, for all his bluster and all his, skullduggery in his past, and he admits to this being a crazy womanizer at the time, he always loved women and women loved him.
Yes.
He was never abusive. He was never mean or cruel. He was always a positive force. And I think, you know, I have always hungered for that kind of example, you know? I found it with him, absolutely, and it's magical.
And just the pure confidence that he exudes. Nothing, you can tell, like, you...
It's more than confidence. It's cockiness, but not in a pejorative way. It's cockiness in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, it's not narcissism. It's cockiness, you know, and I don't mind, you know, saying that it's cockiness. It's okay because
he
deserves it. He's a guy, you know, Stanley Kubrick did not suffer fools gladly. As we learn, Stanley Kubrick loved him and loved to be around him. But not only that, we don't talk about this on the podcast. But basically, he is responsible for the best scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Fix, you know, and we'll talk about that after. But, you know, and I think he brought so much, you know, also, you know, the contact lenses that the silver that they put in his eyes were right. so uncomfortable and so painful. And he loves to bitch about it, but he did it.
He did it. You know? He sucked it up and he did it.
And we've all had actors on shows. It's like whining about, oh, you know, I got to get up early and I got to do this. And oh, and I'm tired. And Gary Lockwood, you know, that he did the job.
Yeah.
And he did
the job,
so
and he
well.
Made it better.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, I'm not as big a fan of Where No Man Has Gone Before as you guys, but I am a huge fan of Gary Mitchell. Yeah. You know, I love that character. And, you know, I love his performance. I love Sally Kellerman in it, too.
Yeah.
You know, I think she's great.
There's a whole alt Star Trek in my head now.
She famously told us in 50-Year Mission, Ed did the interview. She said, I first met Gary Lockwood on another show before that. And I thought he was such an amateur and an arrogant a-hole, basically, is what she said. And she said, but that didn't last long. She said, I basically, you know, found him irresistible. You know, yeah. I gave into that charisma where it's like, he is just so charismatic. And, you know, so she did a complete 180 on him by the time they, you know, did Where No Man Has Gone Before, which is so, you know, so interesting. I don't know who you'd get to play him if you ever put it, you know, if anybody like Strange New Worlds decided to put Gary Mitchell in
the
show.
That's the thing. I mean, there's nothing that show needs more than Gary Mitchell.
Right. Yeah. It's like, and honestly, the only... it's like the only person I can think of who could possibly even like approach that
is Anson.
Is Anson, and he's already playing Captain Pike.
Yeah, it's fascinating because there's just no one like him anymore.
Brit. You need an Australian or a Brit. Yep. There are not a lot of American actors that can, you know, carry themselves like that.
Yeah,
and of course they'd be canceled for saying the things that he said in this interview in about 3 seconds.
It's an even half of it.
Our friend, you know, Hazel Honeysuckle was at the panel, and she loved it. But she said the expression on our faces as the panel went on, she'd never seen anything like it. It was like to see the way that we were responding to what he said, and just stunned disbelief.
Mark was talking about, you know, his Shatner interview feeling like riding a wild horse. This is like riding a team of wild horses. Oh, okay. It's unbelievable. All of us barely got a word in edgewise to try and steer the conversation, because you can't really. You can just sort of mention a key word here and there and see where he goes. But yes. There's no controlling him. You just have to ride the whirlwind, and he is incredible that way.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I want to give you guys credit, because I thought Darren did a remarkable job with the Q&A, you know, knowing what to ask Gary. And then, of course, Ashley, you know, as we were about to transition to the audience, you teed up his gorilla story.
Not gorillas.
Okay. His baboon story.
But and you opened the God Pandora's box.
Yeah. And I'm so grateful that you did, because that is a remarkable story. And if you're still listening when that's over, there's more to come.
And you'll never eat dessert the same way again.
Shall we unleash this interview on the world, gentlemen?
Let's do it.
Yes.
Okay, we'll be back with Gary Lockwood right after these brief commercial words.
This GAFU mess is a lot of fun. What do you think?
It's really interesting. The three-dimensional color pictures are extraordinary. I find these how to play football reels very instructional. I always considered the GAFU Master an ingenious invention of great educational value.
Gee, I always thought it was just a lot of fun.
Star Wars. You and your children loved it. Now the Earthlings at Kenner have asked my associate and me to present the Star Wars collection. truly remarkable toys and games for your children. What are you so excited about now? My goodness, the Star Wars TIE Fighter and X-Wing Fighter. Now your children can relive our great space battles or collect our wonderful Star Wars companions with Kenner's Star Wars action figures. R2, it's a little you. Kenner's new radio-controlled R2-D2 anyone can command. Ah, the Star Wars land speeder that moves like it's floating. And here's Kenner's Death Star space station, four floors of action, a trash compactor too. Listen, R2, that's the Star Wars electronic laser battle, a game of speed, reflex, and reaction. These and other toys and games in Kenner's Star Wars collection are sold separately. Batteries are not included. May the Force be with you and your children.
The Inglourious live tour continues as the Trexperts make their way across this fine country of ours to all kinds of great convention goodness. You can see us next in Trek Conderoga as we join Jonathan Frakes, Brent Spiner, and Clint Howard for some Tranya at the Star Trek tour. Darren?
It's going to be amazing. Particularly because it's going to be the first time that Mark Altman visits the Star Trek original series set tour. And I'm going to be there to watch every minute of it.
And me too. Wait. Not a hologram, not an imaginary story, but real, live. You can touch me, but only if you pay extra. Don't touch me. Don't touch me. Don't look
and
at
don't
me.
And don't try and steal his coffee.
I can't wait. And of course, Memorial Day weekend will be in Oklahoma City for the inaugural Oklahoma City show from GalaxyCon in July.
In July,
Ashley and I will be at San Diego Comic-Con. Well, Darren, tell the folks where you'll be.
I will be in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I'm going to debut a little something about Star Trek the Motion Picture.
I would go, but I can't pronounce it. Right. And then of course, in August, sure, we're going to find our way to San Jose as we're reunited, and it feels so good, for the inaugural San Jose GalaxyCon. And we're looking forward to seeing a lot of you up there. It's going to be a really fun one.
That's exciting. Is that the right word?
It is exciting.
It's exactly.
It'll be the only time it takes you guys less time to get to a convention than it does me.
That's true. We can walk there in the time it takes you to get there.
Yeah.
And this fall, Ashley and I will be doing Nightmare Weekend back in Richmond. I know what restaurants we won't be going to. And we bring it on all home at Columbus, Ohio, at GalaxyCon. So for more information, go to GalaxyCon.com, ComicCon.org, and StarTrekTour.com. And you can see us at one or all of these amazing conventions. And we can't wait to see you there. Always great to see our listeners join the expedition. So until then, keep on trekking ingloriously, of course, all the way to GalaxyCon, Star Trek Tour, and Comic-Con. And we are so delighted. It's rare that you can sit down and talk to one of the stars of one of the greatest movies of all time. Also, of course, we just showed a clip from The Lieutenant, which is really a remarkable show.
Good old. Talk to you later.
Good morning, Lieutenant.
Nice
morning.
How are you? What odds we get that call from the bank by 5 p.m.?
I never bet on a sure thing. It takes all the fun out of it.
Will you have some breakfast, Lieutenant?
No, I don't care for
anything. Well, come sit down and have some coffee.
Come on.
Okay, a little coffee.
Something bothering you?
Yeah, that campaign you've launched.
Well, if you mean the campaign for Bonnie, I didn't launch it. You did.
All right. I did, accidentally. That still doesn't make it right.
Oh, come off it, Lieutenant. It's the best thing that's happened to Bonnie in 20 years. It's good for Bonnie, it's good for the picture, and the picture's good for the Marine Corps.
Well, maybe you're right about the picture, Sanders, but you're not concerned about Bonnie or the Corps. You're just doing this to exploit him.
He's a man who got a bum deal. You said so yourself.
It's not what I said.
Well, whatever you said, Lieutenant, you certainly raised the question. And as long as you did, I'm going to do whatever I can to see to it that he gets that decoration. I like him, I respect him, and I think he's entitled.
If you haven't seen it, Warner Brothers put it out a couple years ago, finally on DVD, and it's really worth checking out. But we are delighted to welcome the great Gary Lockwood. What's
the best part of the show?
What's best for you?
There's right.
Fantastic.
Well,
I feel like a real estate agent.
Well, Gary, of course, you had an incredible experience working with the legendary Stanley Kubrick. And it's such an interesting path to how you ended up in that movie and how vital you were to the creative process in one of the most iconic scenes in the history of cinema, the scene in the pod. Can you talk a little bit about the road to 2001 and how and your relationship was so unique with Stanley? People think of him as a very cold man, but that was not your experience.
So what do I push? Anything? Or is it just on? Oh, it's just on. It's like me sometime. First off, to dispel any myths, Stanley was the only guy I worked for smarter than I was. Did that piss you off? Anyway, no, Kubrick was the greatest guy, incredibly bright. There was nobody like him. I mean, you know, people say, you did Star Trek and you did 2001, 6 days, 6 months. So, you know, if you put that together in your head, when people say to me, which is your favorite job, Star Trek or 2001, I'm not against Star Trek. I don't mean it that way. I just mean the worst thing about that job, and I've called it the worst job I ever had because of I had to wear these full contact eye covers to make my God, so I could become God.
It's like a man who has been blind all of his life, suddenly being given sight. Sometimes I feel there's nothing I couldn't do in time. Some people think that makes me a monster, don't they, Jim?
Are you reading all our thoughts, Gary?
I can sense mainly worry in you, Jim. Safety of your ship.
What would you do in my place?
Probably just what Mr. Spock is thinking now. Kill me. Well, you can.
Stop it, Gary.
I also know we're orbiting Delta Vega, Jim. I can't let you force me down there. I mean, I want to leave the ship, not yet. I may want another place. I'm not sure yet just what kind of a world I can use.
Use?
I don't understand it all yet. But if I keep growing, getting stronger, where the things I could do, like maybe a god could do...
And
basically tinfoil in
yeah, tinfoil and a full lenses, full yeah. Contact over the eyeballs. On the first day, I didn't wear them, and Roddenberry, being the trickster that he was, didn't say anything to me about it. And boom, the guy pulls my head back, puts these two eyes in, and fortunately, in my career, I'd been a cowboy stuntman, and I knew camera angles and everything. And so somebody said, can you see? And I said, no, I can't see. So all the fights and everything I did, they allowed me to choreograph it because, am I going on too long here?
Oh, keep going, Gary. Oh.
We're here to hear. You know, stunt fighting in movies has, first off, movie time and real time are not, there's no relationship between them. A minute on film is like a month in real life. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but stunt fights are all angles. And because I had been mostly a cowboy stuntman, I knew all the angles and the lenses. And when I would work with the New York actors later in my career, and they were all into method and stuff like that. I mean, you know, I can't say I belong to that school at all. But, you know, they're okay. And I'd be on a job, and they'd come right out of the actor's studio, and they'd go, and they'd be trying to get themselves in character. And they say, you don't take any preparation. I say, yeah, I do. The guy says, action. I said, in action, I become another guy, you know? You ought to learn to do that.
But you knew the physicality of working for a camera.
Absolutely. When you're setting up stunts, you know, if I one day was working on a job and I asked what lens the cameraman had, and these two young kids from New York said, well, what does that have to do with the emotions we're using in this? You know, and I go, how about everything? Yeah. You know, meaning reality is reality. Reality in front of a camera is reality of a different nature. It's a technical medium first. And so if you learn where all the lenses are, if it's a long lens, you have to cut your emotions down. If it's a wide angle lens, meaning, you know, big screen, you can be more overt. But, I mean, you take an actor like Jim Carrey. I'm not from that school. I mean, that guy's all over the place. So I would imagine they shoot the guy with a wide angle all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, how can they keep him in the box? Anyway, I don't know if I'm going, you know, if I'm going in a direction you care about hearing, but acting in front of a camera, you know, people, I've worked in Broadway, I've worked in the theater. I mean, it's nice and everything, and I think it's fun. The best thing about it is that you can sleep till 11 o'clock. No, hear me out. You know, I on the days you had a matinee, you go, hey, man, I get to sleep till 4 o'clock, yeah. You know, which means you could raise holy hell the night before. But
certainly your training as a stuntman and being able to know which lens they were using and how to adapt your performance to them was appreciated by Stanley Kubrick, right?
Because Kubrick was the greatest.
Because he knew that you knew what you were doing.
Yeah. I asked him one day, I said, hey, Stanley, I gambled with Stanley. I played snooker with him. I never played chess with him, even though I was the best chess player in Malibu. I was.
I believe you.
Yeah. And I'm bragging, but I'm a braggart. And so one day Stanley said, one of my buddies, when I came back from the movie, said, hey, did you play Stanley in chess? Stanley was a chess hustler in Greenwich Village.
Yeah.
And I knew about him because the word gets around. And one of my buddies said, hey, did you play Stanley? I said, no, man. I said, why not? Hey, I like to win.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I am a poker player, though. I ran games when I was a movie star on Wednesday nights.
You're bluffing.
I ran games, cut the pot. I bought good food, a lot of booze. But I started playing poker. I grew up on a ranch. My father was a very successful man. He started Bunny Love Carrots, and the little carrots in the bag were started by my uncle. You know, you throw them in your kid's lunchbox. It's 40% of the market now, the little carrots. But anyway, my dad found out that on Saturday nights, he thought I'd be taking my girlfriend to the valley to a drive-in and get in the back seat. That's my old man. And he said to me, hey, Shorty. He used to call me Shorty. I was 6'1". Yeah. And my father was from Poland, came across on the boat. My mother was from Berlin. So I was the firstborn in America in the family. Anyway, my father said, hey, Shorty, I found out you're playing poker at the Saucus Cafe, Burkhardt Saucus Cafe. And when your dad catches you, and he's smart as he was, you just kind of give up. And I looked him right in the eye, and I said, yeah, I am. He said, Shorty, you work hard for your money. You drive truck, you work on the ranch. What are you doing? And that's a real interesting moment because all of you who have had a successful life, which I've had and I hope you have, there comes a time where you've got to confront people with your father or what's happening in your life. And I said, well, this is the time. I said, Dad, I enjoy playing because I'm winning a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And he knew these guys. You know, one guy was a Vaseline, heir to the Vaseline fortune, and Newhall Ranch was the largest ranch company in America.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of those guys was Bobby Cheeseborough. He owned part of Newhall Ranch. And these guys are all in the poker game, and it was high-stakes poker, big bucks. And he said, so what are you doing in there with those guys? They're rich. And then there was that moment, and I'm going to take the Muleta sword out. I'm going over to the bull's horns, and I'm going to kill him, and I'm going to tell my dad what's happening in life. It's finally time. I said, Dad, you don't really understand. I'm better than they are. And my dad doesn't understand anything about poker. So he says, well, that means you win? Well, yeah, in the movies, the guy wins all the time. But in real life, there are nights you can't get any good cards. Those of you out there who play poker know that you just can't do anything. So you have to cut your losses and, you know.
And let them invite you back.
Kenny Rogers said, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. So on the nights you're not getting anything, you just stay cool. You know, you just sit there and you take your lumps.
Yeah.
You drop. So my dad said, well, you're winning a lot of money. And I'll tell you what I did with that money later. So I said, yeah, I'm winning quite a bit of money. He says, well, where is it? I said, I didn't want you to know about it. He said, where is it? It's out in the yard in cans. I buried my money so my father wouldn't know. Now, I'm going to go on to the next move. I went to UCLA. I was on a football scholarship. I also won a high school. I won the poster contest for Smokey the Bear for all of America. So I was an artist. I was a football player. And I ended up an English major, you know, because I like to read. But the point that I'm making here is that, you know, if you have a kid and he's smart and he's doing well and he's a cocky kid like I was, don't try to hold him down. Just try to get him to stay out of jail.
So in other words, you stayed out of jail by not playing Stanley and chess.
Well, you know, I'm not stupid. Although, I want to tell you, Stanley had a snooker table, big, huge, antique snooker table. Most beautiful thing you ever saw, probably 5-10 grand. And Stanley loved playing snooker. Well, snooker is not pool. Pool, you shoot hard. It's the same cue and all that, but snooker is a delicate game. It's played with red balls and number balls. Probably some of you out here have played it. Probably not very many of you. You're Star Trek fans. You probably don't do things like that. Well, some of you do. But you don't tell your wife. Anyway, so I'm playing Stanley, and Stanley says, you know, sometimes you don't use a crutch. And a crutch is the thing you have when you have a difficult angle and you get out, you put the crutch down, and you put the cue ball on it. Right. Did you know that?
I didn't.
I knew you didn't. You can tell by looking at him. He's not a player.
Well, or that could be me fooling you.
That's right. You could be bluffing.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Although people who bluff only in movies win, but in real life, they don't ever win in real life. So you put this thing down, you put the cue stick on it, and then you go like that, and you just call it crutch. So Stanley says, you know, you're the only person I've ever played that never uses a crutch. You just use your left hand. Okay, now I'm bragging. I said, yeah. And he said, why is that? I said, I'm ambidextrous. I played basketball. I was a center at only 6'1". And why was I? Because I could shoot with either hand. Yeah, okay. So Stanley said, what would happen if you played me the whole match with your left hand? I said, I'd still beat you. And so the rest of the time, I played with him. I love Stanley Cooper. He's the smartest, brightest man I ever knew. And so every Friday night, I'd go to his house. We'd have a great meal. I'd show up with all these incredible London birds, you know, with the mini skirts. And Stanley's wife would go, you know. And Stanley would always go, you always show up with those beautiful girls. How do you meet them? I said, I'm a cowboy. Yeah. I go out in the park. I see a great looking chick.
You got your lariat?
Yeah. I go out in the park and I see a good looking chick and I just walk up and say, hey, look, I remember once one of the most beautiful ones I ever met had this big wild dog and she was trying to, she was a gorgeous chick and she's got this dog on a leash and I walked up and I said, hey, lady, in exchange for your phone number, I'll shape that dog up for you. Anyway, it was kind of funny. That chick was beautiful. She was the mistress to somebody real high in government.
As it happens, yeah.
As it happens, you know. But she used to sneak around with me once in a while. Anyway, okay, so here's what I did with the money I won. When I got in college, I realized that cash, you know the old thing, money talks, BS walks. I became a money lender, which really makes me a horrible person, I know, but I was a money lender. So if you were a dweeby fraternity guy, now everybody's hip. But, you know, in the 50s, fraternity guys, some of them were dweeby. And they'd come up to me and they wouldn't know how to do anything. And I'd been on the rodeo circuit as a kid and been all over the planet by then, you know. And I'd look at them and say, okay, what do you want it? Well, I want to borrow some money. I've got a date with Winnie Alker, the Alpha Delta Phi Delta. Oh, you do? Yeah, what do you think I ought to do? Well, take her to this restaurant, buy her this, buy her that. You know, like, so I became the guy. You know, like James Garner in the movie, you know, the collector.
You're the guy behind the guy.
I was the guy. And so when I got kicked out of school, going forward, I got kicked out of school for beating the hell out of one of those fraternity guys. I did, in a beer bust. And so I had to go off, and I lived in Mexico for a year and worked on a fishing boat for a German guy. Had a great time. And you know, I came back to UCLA, and I'm just about finished here. I'm rambling, but, you know, what are you going to do? So I came back from Mexico and went back out for football practice. And here I'd been living the life in Mexico, you know. I mean, I was working on a boat. The guy that owned it was a German guy. He knew I was half German. He said, well, I'll give you a deal and everybody that you bring on a charter. You know, so I was really doing well. And then I went down to Acapulco and I gigoloed for a while. I did the old gigolo, you know. I did the old gigolo with the rich chicks and stuff like that. So yeah. I know that I'm a bad person, but, you know, I had a great life. I'm telling you, very few people in this business have had probably as much fun as I have in their life.
So, and then you met Gene Roddenberry.
Well, Roddenberry, listen, Roddenberry was a very talented man, don't get me wrong, but he was a hustler himself.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And the things that we would do all the time, back and forth with each other, when he sent me the script to do Star Trek, mm-hmm. I had already signed with Kubrick for 2001. And so Gene sent me the script, and I looked at him. I said, hey, Gene, I'm going off to make this big movie. I'm not, I started off in movies, but I was in television at that time. And he said, it was hard in my day to do both. Today, they're lucky. They get to do whatever they want. But in my day, you couldn't do that. So I said, well, I don't know if I want to do any TV. I'm going back to the movies. And Roddenberry said, well, I'll send a script to you, and you read it, and I'll take care of you financially.
Right.
That's all I'm going to say.
And so, it'd be so great if you would do this for me, because you would be a great asset to our show.
Thank you, Gene. Zip it. I would go like this. Zip it up. Don't con me all the time. You know, give me a break. So I said to Roddenberry, hey, Gene, so I'm out in space and I get zapped by some fortune and I become God? And he goes, yeah. And we all know that's who you think you are. I knew you'd laugh. Everybody laughs. See, that's self-deprecation.
Yes.
Flagellation. I was a Catholic until I gave up religion. And so, you know.
When you became God.
Yeah.
Well, why bother? You already know the answer, you know. So anyway, I've had a hell of a good life, and I'm having fun. And this is the first show I've done in almost 4 years. Mm. You know, during the COVID, I said, forget it. I'm not rich, but I'm not poor. I have a beautiful home in Delaware. A lot of bedrooms, a lot of bathrooms. No mortgage. I got a great life. I've been married 4 times. I have a great wife. I've been with her 35 years. So I've kind of calmed down. My first wife was Stephanie Powers. You remember her from Heart to Heart. Very beautiful chick, really beautiful. Second wife, a hustler like me. I found out after about 6 months of being married to her, I got to get rid of, jettison her. You know, jettison, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. And you pay.
Of course.
You pay. I
look. Nobody rides for free.
You pay. Nobody rides free, right? And then, let's see.
That was two.
Oh, third wife was a beautiful woman, my daughter's mother. That's the only kid I ever had. I won't tell you about how we got rid of the other kids because that's a big issue now in the new election. You know what I'm talking about. Mm. So, well, I'll get a laugh if I tell it. In my day in Hollywood, if you were like me and you were wild and everything, the women liked me. So I was racing through all these beautiful girls all the time. And some would get pregnant.
What?
On occasion. And so I had this this black guy from the ghetto that did abortions for me.
Oh, my God.
I swear it's true. And one day, he turned. I almost laughed. I almost can't say this. He turned to me and said, Mr. Lockwood, I tell you, the way you are with these ladies, you had to put me on retainer.
God.
So has anybody ever said that to you in your life? You know, an abortion.
I
had to put you on retainer. So one of the great other moments, and I'm going to wrap it up, was I'm going to Stanley Kubrick's house. I used to go quite often when I was in London. And I get there one night, and Peter Sellers, one of the greatest talents that ever walked the planet. I don't care if you loved him or hate him. He could do anything. And I have a Mini Cooper, and I pull up, and Peter's a car freak. I don't know if you knew that. And he says, I said, Peter, Gary Lockwood. He says, hell, man, I know who you are. How are you? I said, good, good, good. What's happening? He said, well, you know, is that your Mini? Yeah. Have you got the runaway package? No. 300 pounds. Put in electric windows, blah, 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 you know. Put your extra power. Mini. So anyway, Peter said to me, hey, by the way, do you come back here often? I said, well, when I'm in London, I call him and I come out here and have a meal and chat with him. And I never bring any women anymore because his wife used to get pissed off because Stanley would eyeball all these great looking chicks I'd bring. And anyway, Peter looked at me and he said, I'll tell you something, mate. It's you and I. That Stanley had a history of not having actors back at the house.
Right.
Yeah. So I not only enjoyed my time with Kubrick, not only did I really consider him the most skilled, talented man I ever knew in anything, I gambled with him. I talked him out of betting the fight with Henry Cooper and Muhammad Ali. And he said, it's 8-1. I said, well, so? He said, well, I said, how much are you going to bet? He says, I'm thinking $500. I said, I'll book it. You'll book it? That's, if you lose, that's 8 times 5, $4,000. You got $4,000 sitting around? I said, yeah. I had English pounds stuffed in my mattress. And he says, well, comes the day of the fight, I said, have you decided what you're going to do? He said, I'm following your lead. He said, I trust you. I was a boxer some as a kid, too. You don't know about that. So, I fought. It's one of the things I did in my life.
But Stanley made you stop gambling on set because you were taking the crew for all their money. And
he did. Oh, you've heard that story.
Yeah.
So one day Stanley goes, Lockwood, I don't want you gambling with my crew anymore. What's the deal? Most of them were Cockneys. And Cockneys are a whole world of their own. If you haven't lived in London, you don't know Cockneys. So one day, this Cockney guy owed me like 500-600 pounds, which is almost $1,500. And we would write it down, you know. And
they weren't making that much a week.
He was making about 40 pounds a week.
Yeah.
And he's down to me, in the neighborhood of $1,500. And so on a given Monday, he doesn't show up. And I turned to one of the other Cockney guys and I said, hey, what happened to whatever the hell his name was, Rice or David or somebody like that? And he said, he owes you a lot of money, didn't he, mate? I said, yeah, he did. Well, he skedaddled on you. He's gone, flew. I said, wow, he was making 40 pounds a week. I don't get that. Why would he leave his one of the best jobs around working on this film? He's a Cockney, mate. Okay, what does that mean? Well, he doesn't look at it like he lost a 40-pound-a-week job, mate. He looks at it like he did you out of 500 pounds.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that was it. So, introduction. And then later comes Michael Caine, who was a Cockney. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How much did he take you for?
No.
Oh, good.
No. Caine, no. I like Michael Caine. He
borrowed
fine.
Your Mini Cooper to steal gold from Italy.
Yeah.
Michael Caine is one talented man.
Darn right.
You're damn right. Real talented man. So any questions, anybody?
I want to ask you something first to kind of tie the whole room together. Because you've mentioned boxing and gambling and Kenny Rogers and even gratification. Gratification. Right?
Oh, so I thought you said Prestone.
I was looking for a nice way to say sex. So I have to ask you, Kenny Rogers, he said you have to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. He also said you have to know when to walk away and know when to run. Now, this is just a hypothetical, but if you are confronted by a pack of angry baboons, do you walk away or do you run?
You guys really want me to tell that story?
Oh, my God.
Maybe not all of it.
Maybe not all the story. We can.
No, highlights.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Buckle up.
I'm in Cape Town. I think you guys will like this. This is probably of all of the weird things that have happened to me, this is one of the best. I mean, it's humorous, but I have to go all the way on it. So if you're a real straight lady, turn your ears in, But so I'm at Cape Mountain. And I sailed a lot in my life, so I'm very much into, the Southern Ocean's going left to right and the Indian Ocean's coming down like this. And so I'm standing on Cape Mountain, and I'm looking at the two oceans, and I've got all these thoughts in my head of, by the way, the greatest sailor in the world's a lady. You don't know that, but it is. Her name was Ellen MacArthur. She was an English girl. And so I'm thinking about all these things, sailors and everything. Chichester, mm-hmm. The gypsy moth, And there's a little hut where you can get coffee. So I go in and buy a coffee. And as you're walking out, I've got a coffee cup in my left hand. And there's a sign over the doorway, do not take merchandise outside this door. So, hey, cowboys don't pay attention to rules. Fuck, screw this, So I walk out the door. And I've got a coffee cup in my left hand, a white coffee cup, styrofoam. Whoom! Five or six surround me.
Baboons.
And they've been known to kill people out in the wild. And I, whoa, Jesus. And the baboon, I'm looking at him, and boy, they're just, you know.
They're eyeing you.
And they want some coffee.
They're looking at me like, what is this? They weren't into coffee. They just wanted something. And then whatever it was, I had it.
Yeah.
So the baboon grabs my right arm like this, and I've got the coffee cup in it. And he's pulling the coffee cup into his mouth. And these are called incised meanders. These are like, you know, the big fang teeth. And he's opened these up, and I'm just looking down into this mouth, and he's pulling this thing toward my mouth, or toward his mouth. And I go, well, it's cowboy time here. So I kick him. I hit him. He had my left hand. I hit him with a right cross. Boom. Knocked him on his ass. Calipicinates. I can't speak Latin as well. And boom, give him a shot. Bam, he's down. Boom. And I start fighting these baboons. I am also trained in martial arts. You don't know that. Okay, what can I say? So, bum, 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 and I'm really decking these boons. And now the driver of the car is in a right-hand drive limo. And my third wife is my girlfriend of those days. I'm not married to her. She's in the back seat, and the driver's wife was in the back seat with my girlfriend at the time. And this guy Bevis was really a fun guy, and he hits the electric window, and Lockwood, walk down here slowly, mate. Don't run, but walk macho. And I'm kind of laughing. I walk macho, you know. Okay. I felt like Robert Mitchum, you know.
Right.
Put on a Mitchum face, and I'm walking like this. I've got to go about, maybe 35 yards to the car. And I get in the car. Now, this becomes a real raw story. So if you don't want to hear a raw story, you ladies, close your ears. But so I get in the car, and the baboon comes right up, the first guy, the leader. He's staring at me, and I'm in the passenger seat, which today is behind the steering wheel. And he's looking at me like this, and Bevers goes, he wants you bad. I said, yeah, believe me. He had a shot. I got mine in first. He says, oh, man, he's pissed. I said, well, he is, but I'm in here now. And he says, the baboon jumps up on the boot of the Mercedes, and he goes down near the emblem, and he sits down. Shall I do it?
No.
Shall I say it?
We'll figure a way.
Okay.
He expresses his displeasure.
I'll use a bigger word. He ejaculates into the palm of his hand. And we all go, whoa. It's a baboon ritual.
So it's religion.
They only do it on Mercedes. And the baboon ejaculates into his palm. Then he gets up, and he comes up, and he throws it like this, and it hits the windscreen. God, it was like tapioca pudding.
Oh, my God. Okay. That was a good story.
He has comedy timing, this guy.
I think we should open it up to these folks who have been waiting all hour.
Gary, before we do that, I got to ask you one last thing, because the one thing we know about Bill Shatner is everyone was scared of him. What I realize is you were tougher than Bill, and he was probably, and more cocky in a good way, and that's why you're so great in that episode, because Shatner had a genuflect to you as opposed to everyone else where they were genuflecting to Bill.
Which is the right thing
to do.
Because
you were number one on a call sheet, and you acted like you were number one on Star Trek when you were the guest star.
I was okay with Shatner. It's the fans that created the rift.
Mm.
You know, a lot of fans thought, you did the pilot. Why weren't you honored? I did that as a favor, I swear to you, to Roddenberry. Roddenberry was told he made a pilot called The Cage.
Yep, right.
And it didn't sell. And then NBC, I think it was, mm-hmm. put up the money for a second pilot and said, Gary Lockwood has a good relationship with corporate America, you know. And meaning, you know, you got to sell shows. Mm-hmm. When you make a pilot and you show it in New York, some corporations got to say, okay, I'll buy 10. They used to buy 13 shows. Now they buy 3 or 4, right?
He had promised them Wagon Train to the Stars.
That's what he said.
And they brought you in to make it more of a cowboy show.
I'd say maybe you're right. Yeah. So anyway, I'm now doing 2001 one day, and I'm doing something in London on PR. And some guy walks in from NBC, mm-hmm. and he says, you know that pilot you shot for Roddenberry? And you have to understand, you guys, don't get sensitive on me. It's a long time ago, and I wore these eyes. It was a horrible job. So I didn't think too much of it. You know, I was like, well, you know. Okay.
Just a gig.
Yeah, it was a thank you. When you're an actor, it's just another way of not working for a living. And so he comes up, and he says, it's sold. Well, as much as I had in MIDI with Roddenberry on occasion, I liked him.
Sure.
I really did like him. And I said, oh, Gene got that on the air? Boy, that's good. Never knowing it would become, it's an empire.
Yeah.
It's not a successful television show. It's a bloody empire. I have traveled around the world. I mean, other countries, signing autographs on
that
six-day
job.
A Star Trek that I made. And, you know, here's something I kind of had these eyes. It drove me crazy. I couldn't wait for the job to be over. And I've made a small fortune just signing my name on a photograph. So I'm glad I did that. It was fun.
Let's go to a few questions because we only have a few minutes, but please, I want to get to everybody.
Okay. My name is Alexander Whitcomb, and I have been a huge fan of 2001 A Space Odyssey, and my favorite filmmaker is Stanley Kubrick, and who has made this icon of science fiction and cinema, generally speaking. And how is your chemistry with the actor who played as
Keir Dulay?
Yes. How is your chemistry with the actor Keir Dulay?
Keir Dulay, it's an Irish name.
Who played as
Keir Dulay played Dave Bowman.
Yes.
Well, I'm second banana. Keir was first guy. I'm still friendly with him today. He lives in Connecticut. He's very much a gentleman. He's not a cowboy. He can't fight me.
Or a baboon.
But here's what I love about Keir Dulay. We're in Australia, and we're doing both of us are up in front of about 5,000 people. And we're carrying on. And Keir Dulay, somebody yells, wow, are you guys ever the Odd Couple? And I always love Keir Dulay for this. He says, you guys don't understand. He's a poker player, a liar, a hustler. He's read 1,000 books. He's smarter than I am. So I'm the good guy. He's the bad guy. But ask him any question, he has a shot at answering it. That's who I am. So he was two or three men in my life that I worked with, I'll never forget. I never forget Elvis. Mm-hmm. Never forget Keir Dulay. And another guy, he's dead now, is who was the star of those weird airplane shows.
Leslie Nielsen.
I loved him. Great time I had with him in the Philippines. So
we have time for one more question. So let's thank you for that.
Happy birthday, Frank.
Thank you, Meg.
See you next Wednesday.
Hi, my name is Miles Stanley Ward, and my question to you is, in your younger years as an actor, what were your thoughts about Stanley Kubrick's 1960 film, the historical epic movie Spartacus?
What were your thoughts about Spartacus and Kubrick's films prior to 2001, Strange
I worked
Love?
On Spartacus in the beginning, up when they were, you know, up in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Before Spartacus broke loose, I was hired as a stuntman up there. And so later when I'm, you know, then Kirk Douglas fired the director.
Right.
And hired Stanley Kubrick because he'd made a small film. And Kirk Douglas is no dummy. I have a Kirk Douglas story. If you ever buy my book, which I hope my wife finishes editing one day, I have the greatest Kirk Douglas story you will ever hear. I can't tell
you. That's it. A tease for later.
That's a tease
that's
for
a
his book.
For-
Gary, thank you so much. We get amazing stories you will never...
We're out of time. We only got 45 minutes.
We're getting a hook.
Yeah.
But you've never been to a panel like this, never likely again. But if you want to talk to Gary, he'll be at his booth. So thank you so much, and they're going to take a big group selfie.
We're back. We're back.
We're still. Are we still on?
Are you still listening? Are you out there listening in the dark? Because
crying.
I think we just lost half our audience.
Well, you know what?
Scrum.
Maybe so. But the ones that are left, you're true Trexperts.
That's right.
True campsters.
You went where no man has gone before. You with some coffee and tapioca pudding.
Go ahead.
I love the fact that Gary Lockwood, he said it himself, he's a jock, but he was interested in art and literature.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a combination of these forces that made up who he was. And that was one of the reasons why Stanley Kubrick idolized him. He loved him so much, and he thought he was perfect for the role and perfect to hang around with. He kept him on for the run of the show, basically, and really respected his opinion on things.
Yeah.
And when Gary pushed back to him because he thought that exposition scene dealing with Hal was not working. He said, "This scene is shit."
Yeah.
And Kubrick shut down production. He said, "Everyone go home."
This is the scene where Hal finds out that they're conspiring to pull the plug.
Right. Yeah. And Gary came up with the idea to have it happen in the pod, so that he could shut off all hearing from Hal, and Hal wouldn't know what they were doing. And it was the associate producer actually that came up with, they were thinking, well, how does Hal find out? How does he discover what's going on? That is an interesting way. And the associate producer, and I can't remember his name. People will be shouting at the
Jessica von Puttermaker.
No. the associate producer came up with the idea, well, why doesn't Hal see them and he can read their lips? And everyone went, "Oh my God, that's a great idea!" And so
it's purely visual.
It's purely visual.
Actor came up with an idea that's purely visible.
Yeah,
visual.
Well, as far as I know, no 9,000 computers have been disconnected.
Well, no 9,000 computers ever fouled up before.
That's not what I mean. Hmm? Well, I'm not so sure what you think about it.
You know, there's a common theme in running through all of Gary's stories, whether he told them on stage or told them to us off stage, and hopefully we bring him onto the podcast and we induce him to tell those stories, where the theme of Gary's life is he tells people exactly what he thinks.
Yeah.
Fearlessly.
Yep.
He stands his ground. He brooks no crap from anyone. He is not afraid to say F you. And if push literally comes to shove, he will
push
shove the
shove.
Hell back. Yes, he will. And I respect that so much. But what I also respect about it is that, and again, some of this is from stories that he told off the panel that I hope he tells, but that there is a thought process in his head, even while he is in action.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell it's not just, hey, I like books and shit. And also, like, I play football and I'm gigolo, which is quite a combo platter. But he really is a thinker. There is, you know, even in action, there's an intellect at work. And I find that so fascinating.
Tapioca pudding.
It looked like tapioca pudding. I'm like, oh.
It's like Bill Cosby. I like the tapioca pudding.
Okay. That brings a whole other
thing. Let's not take it there. But
let's not go.
Look, and I'm sure some of you are saying, well, obviously these stories have been embellished over the years. They can't have happened exactly like that. Maybe. But I think that they're true. Believe him.
I think they're true too. And I'll tell you, you know, it's interesting because Shatner in the documentary talks about, he said he was different because he was into sports and into theater. So mm-hmm. he didn't fit into either one. And it's like Gary was like a cowboy, but also, you know, into acting and into arts and literature. Yeah. It's like they were so unique. They were so unique, you know, yeah. And it's but I got to believe that, the story's 99% of it is true.
Yeah. It's just the details are too wacky and too specific to be made up. Right.
So what did we learn today?
Gary Lockwood is our god, other than Shatner.
We also learned when confronted with an angry baboon, walk
you
macho.
Punch him in the effing face, and then you walk macho down to the car where your girlfriend is waiting.
Oh my god, that whole thing, walk macho.
All macho.
And on stage, you unfortunately you couldn't see it, but he sort of did it while standing in his while sitting in his chair. And oh my God, it's just magical. And you can see it. You can see it all happening in your mind. And it's such a bigger than life persona. But it's, oh my God. I mean, the other lesson is, well, you know, don't take coffee out of the shack, you know?
Don't try to steal it from Gary Lockwood. And you don't tug on Superman's cape.
Well,
you don't
spit
in the wind. You don't try to take Gary Lockwood's coffee on a mountain in South Africa. I don't care if you are a baboon.
I would love to see Quentin Tarantino do a buddy film with Shatner and Lockwood.
Oh my God, dude.
Oh my God. That would be amazing.
Yeah. I think that would be amazing. I mean, you forget buddy film. You just put them in a car and film them going cross country and the stories would be insane.
Absolutely.
I would love that.
Can we be in the car?
We'll be in the follow car.
Yeah,
we'll be in the 18 van, chasing them down. The problem
if
is
you can find us.
Gary Lockwood would be like, "Let's fuck with him," and he'd take the car and he'd start off road racing and just.
Are you do a reality show where every episode Gary Lockwood punches a different animal in the face?
Great. Oh my God.
No Disney. Animals were hurt during the making of this episode.
Gary Lockwood fights a bear.
I have to say that Gary was accompanied to the con by his wife.
It was
who
lovely.
Is an absolute sweetheart. She is so kind and certainly loving and cares for him with her entire heart. And
he
adores her, and they are a lovely team. And just had to say that, you know, lest you think that he's, you know, still swinging it around. He's not.
Catting around?
Yeah.
No, he's not. He's with a wonderful, beautiful, smart, caring woman who we were delighted to have the opportunity to meet. And this was a long time ago. A lot of this stuff transpired, but man, just wild. And speaking of wild, we had a wild time in Richmond. I know a lot of you wondering about the food situation.
We want to hear about the food situation.
It's a previous episode, a little buttermilk and honey to get us started. But, on Friday night, we had the Shatner dinner at Can-Can. Right. Underwhelmed with the quality of the service and the food there. Sorry, Can-Can.
But I think that was a special situation. I think if you go there normally with a normal menu, I think it's probably lovely.
Perhaps. But I was upset when they would not give me the French onion soup instead of the goat cheese tomato basil. But
they set me off on the wrong foot.
Well, goat cheese, greatest of all time. You know, how could that be bad?
But we went back to Vanna 59 with our good new friend Evan Evagora,
who's just a great person,
and his buddy Shane, who's a great person. We love Evan, and he's engaged. We wish him nothing but happiness with that. But man, what a mess that was, because of course they bring the entree out, and I said, excuse me. Is it traditional to bring the entree before the appetizers?
And, of course, Mark has a history of ordering appetizers.
A history willy-nilly. Of appetizers.
And she's like, oh, did you not get your appetizers? Like, no.
Do you see any appetizers?
And then I got the impression that they were just like going to let it go. And I'm like, well, I still want the appetizers.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And he said, well, we're out of the chicken wings. I'm like, okay, but I still want the Cuban nachos. So, we ended up getting the Cuban nachos, which were great.
But, crispy plantains. Yes.
But the one problem with Havana 59, it really was like Havana 1959.
It was very noisy.
Very noisy. And when I got home, I thought, oh, my God, my room smells like cigars. And I realized, no, it wasn't the room. It was me. that was somewhat distressing.
Yeah. Well, we were sitting in the smoking section. That was probably.
Yeah.
When I had requested non-smoking, but. Yeah. It was not to be, Cherie.
I had requested. Like, we'd hoped to take her back to Genesis.
but great spending some time with Evan. And of course, we had a lovely dinner. We made our triumphant return to Perry's, which you longtime listeners will recall we went to in Austin.
Well, it was a return to a different location.
Right.
Yeah, right.
That we'd never been to.
Undisclosed location. Yes. In Short Pump, Virginia.
Yeah.
And we went to nothing Gary Lockwood's familiar with. And we went to Perry's Steakhouse and with the lovely Hazel Honeysuckle and her husband, Mr. Honeysuckle, Mr. Scott Honeysuckle. And we had such a nice dinner that evening.
We had a lovely table, which was away from everybody.
By a fire, but we had a breeze.
Yeah. It was out on the patio that is covered and mostly interior, but it was very lovely.
And the food was delicious. And by the way, so to your point about Havana 59, we had another appetizer issue. But this time, what happened? What did they do? They said,
So this was interesting. So we're sitting there. It's interesting. I love it. I'm saying this is interesting. Like anyone cares. We're doing a podcast. This is fascinating. So I'm sitting there at dinner and I said, we're telling Hazel and Mr. Honeysuckle. We're telling them, we're saying, so we're at Havana 59 and they screw up the appetizers and they end up, I said, but do they offer to make good on it? Do they offer to like either comp it or give us some kind of discount or free drink? You know, usually that's what you do. No, nothing. Absolutely not even an apology. Just like, okay, we'll get you the appetizer, right? So they screw up the side dish for Hazel. They didn't bring her, I guess, whatever she had ordered with her, her thing. And they were so apologetic and they said, well, we'd like to offer you all free dessert because we apologize for this. And it was like, and we just literally finished the conversation about how Havana 59 had screwed it up and done us dirty. And then Perry's to the rescue immediately did the right thing.
Yeah.
And we give them a lot of credit. Our waitress at Perry's was just terrific. I forget what her name
was.
But she was great. And she put up with my water consumption and, constantly was attentive to us. And it was a really nice evening. The food wasn't quite as good as it was in Austin, but it didn't matter because the company and the ambience was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say, so, you know, I've made many such voyages to Perry's around the country. And I am obsessed with their Sunday night three-course pork chop dinner. And I have never been able to finish it in a sitting. Not ever. And what you have to understand, people at home, is that it is a big-ass pork chop with a lash and then the three pork ribs. And they cut it all for you. And it's like, go with God, right? So again, because I'm a human being, I have never been able to finish it, maybe half, and then
it's
always there's something
a
I've
third of a pig.
Yeah, it is. It truly is.
Oh, but Ashley, you don't know this, so this is really funny. So the next day, Darren and I are at lunch with the GalaxyCon team at the Secret Sandwich Shop and Hazel and Mr. Honeysuckle, right? And what's wild is, you know what they're having for lunch?
Their pork chop. Yeah,
pork chop from the previous night.
I tried to
warn them. They brought it to lunch, and they're having that for lunch. We're all having whatever we got at the Secret Sandwich Shop. They're having Perry's for lunch. It was so funny.
I told them they wouldn't be able to. I finished it for the first time ever because I actually followed the instructions, and that's really the lesson, right? It's like when somebody gives you instructions on how to eat something, you listen. They said, eat the ribs, then eat the pork chop, then eat the lash. Usually I go right into the lash, but nope. I did it in that order. I ate the whole thing.
I can't believe I ate that whole thing.
Now, I will say, when I told the waitress that it was the first time I'd ever managed it, she said, well, you know, I've only ever seen three people ever finish the whole thing.
Really? Is that right?
Yeah. I was like, oh my God.
Well, yeah, so to be quite fair, that Perry's had only been open for a few months.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah. So, you know, I was setting the bar rather than trying to get around it.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it was a lovely time and
lovely company.
We attempted to walk macho, but we didn't pull it off. Also, we had a great time seeing many of our fans at the convention, many of our listeners, I should say. Of course, Ultimate Frisbee Danny was there talking, extolling the genius of Jerry Goldsmith. Always good to see Danny at the show. And of course, Josh Karp and his lovely family, big fans of the podcast, came to visit. Undiscovered Mugatu was there, but we didn't see him. He couldn't find us, apparently, but he was at the Gary Lockwood. And I think he wrote on Twitter, I have no idea how you're actually going to use this panel on the podcast. Good luck with that.
Well, like Gary, we're just honest about it. And we put it out there and you react how you react. And we don't care.
Right.
We don't care. Now you sound like me. You care.
We do
you're
care.
You're not like me. You're a sensitive lad.
I don't care. Not one damn bit, Admiral.
I don't care. You care.
But look, it's not about, you know, it's not about whether we care or not. One of the things that I think that I love about being a part of this is that I think we go the extra mile to let our guests and the people we speak to be who they are.
Yeah.
And I think that's so much more important than, again, that regurgitation of events. You can get that from anywhere. I don't care about it. I want to know who these people are underneath and what makes them tick. And I think that's wonderful. And we were given such a unique look inside, such a special human being. And if you don't like that, if like you just decide that, oh, well, I guess, you know, he's not perfect or he said some things that are, you know, that upset me or whatever. And so screw it, I'm done. Well, that's kind of your problem. People are people, man. And
people are people, Rob.
And people are people. And why should it be you and I should get along so awfully? But Gary is an amazing human being. And no, the world would be a lesser place without him.
The emails we're going to get are going to be, well, I understand how he said those things because that was the time he grew up on. But I'm surprised that there was no pushback from you guys about some.
It's not our job to push back.
That's right. It's our job to provide a platform for the people, our guests, and make them feel welcome. And infinite diversity and infinite combinations.
That's right. And sometimes that combination includes baboon.
Includes tapioca pudding.
Courtesy of a baboon. Gary Human.
Oh, my God. And we're not even touching the other stories. Let the people listen and come to their own conclusions. But this is, I have to say, guys, in closing, I am so glad that I didn't leave the show after five seasons because this season has been insane. We had the 300th episode with Kevin and Feige and Terry and Steve Asbell. And we had Shatner last week. We had Lockwood. We got some amazing stuff coming up still. Yeah. And it's like, oh my God, that would have been I would have made a huge mistake. It's like Arrested Development. I've made a huge mistake. So I'm so glad I stayed because this has been a wild ride. And we didn't even talk about the Lieutenant. I wanted to get more into Lieutenant and Gene Roddenberry. We didn't even get close.
Yeah.
Right. That would have turned into some stories. How about it? Right. Yeah. Like that's what I got here.
I got to do the voice for him.
Which was magical.
And he remembered it as opposed to other people.
There was a look of recognition in his face. So I'm very happy about that.
I could see it in his silver eyes.
Well, that's another thing. He couldn't see me back.
That's another thing that we didn't touch on. Because of those crazy, they were basically contact lenses that were sandwiched with a layer of tinfoil, basically, and with a little hole cut out in the center. And it was really hard to see out of them. So a lot of his performance is because of those contact lenses, because he lifts his chin up and has to look down his nose to see anything. So right. He gives this strange godlike stance when he's really just looking out
trying
those
to see.
damn eyeglasses.
He's trying to see, but he comes across as just this arrogant god, right?
Yeah.
Because he's you know, above everyone. And
it's amazing. It's,
pray to me, James. So, oh my God. I just it's so funny. I was saying to you on the plane, I said, God, I used to go to the Museum of Broadcasting, the Paley Center, as a kid to watch that, the version. It's now on the Blu-ray, but at the time they had the pilot version, which had the
original
breaks,
cut of Where No Man Has Gone
and
Before.
And a different main title, different music, and that extra 30 seconds at the top of the show.
Yeah.
And it was the only episode of Star Trek they had. And I would go, this is before VHS existed, like VHS right. was ubiquitous. And I would go to the Museum of Broadcasting and just to watch that. And I must have watched it again and again and again. So it was crazy to sit there at Gary Walkwood and be talking about this.
And if you haven't seen that, you wouldn't have realized why I made such a point of saying that Roddenberry wanted to make it more of a Western to please the network.
Mm-hmm.
And that is totally what he did. And you can see from that edit, it is opening precisely like a Gunsmoke episode.
Yes.
It feels exactly like that. And so that's what tricked the network into saying yes.
But he likes this to arrogantly, and I say that, you know, not really, but like, let's say I was the one who sold the show. Right. And, you know, I always thought he meant like, but he resented the fact that, you know, he never benefited from that. But he said, and I don't know if he said this during the podcast or it was right after, where he said, you know, I worked for 6 months on 2001.
Right.
I worked for 6 days on Where No Man Has Gone Before, but I've made so much more money off of Star Trek from all these conventions right. and all these appearances and everything than I ever made on 2001.
Yeah.
And that's so interesting.
Well, you know, he has both lucrative kickback from a very popular show, and artistic merit from a film that is often considered one of the best films ever made.
And Baby Carrots.
And Baby Carrots. And what
baby
that was another thing.
Carrots. Do 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 do.
I didn't realize that Gary grew up basically 4 miles away from where I live. And when I mentioned where I lived, he said, well, I went to that high school right around the corner. I said, oh, my God. So he grew up around here. I know the Saugus Cafe very well, where he played poker. It's crazy. It's crazy the synchronicity that happens in these kind of things. And I just have to take a deep breath and step back and enjoy how it folds out.
Yeah. Well, look, we're glad you're still listening. We hope you'll continue to rate us 5 stars wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can share your thoughts about this in every episode of Inglourious Trexperts on social, on Inglourious Trek, Inglourious Trexperts, on our new Discord channel. Check it out at Inglourious Trexperts. Or you can email us at trexpertsplus@gmail.com. And every day there's a great new podcast on the Trexperts Podcast Network to check out. On Monday, it's the Weirded Beardos. On Tuesday, it's Trexperts Briefing Room. Wednesday, it's our subscriber-only Deck 78. Thursday, it's Inglourious Trexperts. And on Friday, the 4:30 movie is back. So don't miss it wherever you listen to podcasts. And we'll be back next Thursday with an all-new episode of Inglourious Trexperts. So on behalf of Ashley Edward Miller, Darren Doctorman, myself, Mark A. Altman, keep on trekking, ingloriously, of course, and pray to me, James. Pray to me. I'm just a gigolo, and everywhere I go,
Darren, is this rumor going around that you've got a new podcast?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's Trexperts adjacent. It's a fun thing. It's called The Weirded Beardos. And before you react, it's Kirk Thatcher, our favorite punk on the bus, and myself just talking about stuff.
But I hate him.
You don't hate him.
No, I'm kidding. I'm doing a song from Star Trek IV. I hate you, right?
I berate you.
Oh, yeah. But I don't berate him, and I don't hate him. And if he's involved with you, then I love you.
Well, thanks. It's basically just us talking about sort of all things related to our history of working in the industry. You know, together we have like 78 years of experience working in the entertainment biz.
I'm going to have to listen to that. I thought it was about maintaining your beards or something.
It has nothing to do with beards, actually, which is kind of funny. But it's fun. We basically hang out for an hour every other week. So come and join us. Look for the Weirded Beardos on Spotify if you just want to hear the audio. And we're actually on YouTube as well, The Weirded Beardos.
Great. Can't wait to check it out.
Thanks.
First start of the right and straight on till morning.